I know all of you startup founders out there have one big question. You're all big Trump fans, as I'm sure I hear every single day and I see marching through the streets of Chicago. But one of the biggest things that comes up, well, pretty much every time Donald Trump tweets or opens his mouth, is immigration. And all the conversations that I have with founders, whether it's early stage, later stage, hiring stage, whatever the case, usually comes back to what's going to happen when we try to hire people who are immigrants. I'm not going to get into DACA and into that stuff. You're welcome to contribute that to the comments section as you please. But for this conversation here, we're going to try to figure out some of the tech solutions and some of the businesses that are out there that can, let's just say, resolve that issue for you or maybe alleviate some of that stress that you're experiencing. It's probably one of the most researched things on the internet right now and probably the least well-informed topic when it comes to businesses, maybe that and like lending. I think lending might be probably number one, but this is definitely like right about there, which speaking of which, we're going to be hosting our next free lunch and learn on February 2nd at Tech Nexus focused on lending. I believe the title of that is going to be When to Choose Lending Versus Equity, how to do it. We're going to have some speakers, including Akuba Credit. He would be mad at me if I said Akuba Credit. Akuba co-founder Chris Rettner, as well as our partners at Bank of America, who are an amazing sponsor, not only of this program, but of these events. And they enable us to put these on for you for free so that we can feed you all the delicious food. So I look forward to doing that. The event page is up at events.technori.com. You can also open your inbox in about 20 minutes, and you will see it come through. So I highly, highly recommend checking that out. But let's get back to the main topic here, which is immigration and tech and everything in between. I had a chance to sit down with Dick Burke, CEO of Envoy Global. I'm looking forward to having him share with you some things that I think might make a difference for you. I am your host, Scott Catoon, and I am going to welcome to the studio Dick Burke, CEO of Envoy Global. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Scott. Great to be here and great to get to talk about Chicago and talk about immigration and talk about Envoy.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to cover, you're welcome, of course, and as I say to every guest, you're welcome to come back anytime. We'd love to not only learn from you, learn about the company, learn about the tech, learn about the journey, learn about what it's like to be a CEO, what it's like to be a CEO in Chicago and Illinois, and that's a whole nother bag of whatnot. I think for this podcast, I'm really interested not only to learn about what got you into this and how the tech works and all the fascinating stuff, but also a little bit on, you know, as a leader, how do you grow a company, particularly in a space that right now is catching a ton of conversation, shall we say.
Yeah.
So without any further mirror and smoke and all these cool things, what exactly does your business do?
Sure. We help other companies hire and manage employees across borders. And what that means is really two things. Is we secure the necessary work authorization. So go back to your opening comments, Scott. Many times founders frequently are born overseas.
Yeah.
Many times developers, data people, product people, all sorts of departments, they may be foreign born, right? We help them secure the necessary work authorization to work here in the United States or to work overseas. If you are a Dutch-based company and you need to hire someone to work in Amsterdam, we can procure that for you. So the first thing is getting the work authorization. And then the second thing, which is almost equally important these days, particularly with the current administration in Washington, is we help you manage your foreign workforce and make certain you stay in compliance. Because, you know, someone said to me the following analogy, it's almost like there's a new sheriff in town, and if you're going 56 miles an hour, you're going to get pulled over.
Yep.
And that is the reality. And folks who want to complain about it, fine, but don't put your head in the sand.
Well,
and so there's a huge demand for making certain that you manage this workforce and stay in compliance. Don't have any, you know, one over the speed limit, because you will get busted, or you could get busted. And we help companies do that as well.
Well, as you mentioned, the new government, and there is no government currently working for us in D.C., which is an entirely different conversation.
Right.
Of the topics you brought up, I'll give you two kind of anecdotes from prior guests. One of which is from a female founder of a company called, or an organization called Women 2.0, who, I'll remind you, this is early, right after Trump took office. And so she literally was scared about what she was going to say on the mic for the exact reasons that you just said, which is don't go 57 miles an hour. She was worried that, like, when she left here, foreign born, now she is a resident of the United States, or a citizen of the United States, a resident. She is actually worried about, like, would the lens be sharper on her as a result of her words? And then the second most common thing that I hear, and I suspect is maybe even the impetus for your business, is let's say we started a company out of Northwestern University and half of my founding team or working team were born in Bangalore, India.
Yep.
And then they're going to go back to Bangalore. We're not worried about, you know, getting them here, but visas and things to come back and forth as needed was the major, major worry for them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely right. So let me address each of them, because I've heard of that fact pattern in multiple contexts. So the first one, the people, whether they are male or female, but foreign-born, fearing repercussion, that is very real. We have, last year we served over 1,000 companies at Envoy Global, some immense Fortune 100, some all the way down the startup coming out of Northwestern.
Yep.
Many call us, we speak with them all the time with our customers, terrified of, they want to protest what's happening, they want to speak to the power of foreign national talent, the reality of how foreign nationals create jobs, how they add to the economy, but they're afraid to do so. So your guest that week was not alone.
Yeah.
The other one is the story of the founders coming out of Northwestern or any other school. What is the wisdom of our country, I would posit, to educate them here and then send them overseas to compete with us? A couple interesting statistics, Scott. You know, 10% of all U.S. Employees work for an immigrant-owned business. 20% of the Inc. 500 CEOs are immigrants. 25% of U.S. businesses are started by immigrants. 50% of unicorns have been founded by an immigrant. You know, 52% of all Silicon Valley startups that went public in the last 15 years founded by an immigrant. I mean, do we want to live in a country without Sergey Brin,
no,
without Elon Musk, without Jerry Yang, without Peter Thiel?
Yeah.
And so I think too often this debate turns into a false choice between security versus foreign talent. And it needn't be that. It really should be. It can be a both and. Yes, we can be secure.
Yep.
The statistics, frankly, make clear that foreign-born individuals commit less crime. But even still, the need for security is
that's
real.
Where people can go in the comment section.
Well, it's demonstrable.
No, but it's true, yeah.
I'm not here to argue that. I am here to argue that foreign-born talent is critical. That, number two, U.S. companies need that foreign-born talent to remain competitive. Number three, that if we don't hire that foreign-born country, these other countries aren't sitting on their heels, by the way.
No.
Canada has liberalized their immigration policies. Employers are moving jobs up there. China has liberated their immigration policies. People are moving jobs there. India is doing the same thing. Mexico is doing the same thing. So we just completed a huge survey. And what folks told us last year was that if I can't get the talent here in the United States, I'll move it overseas. So I think as a country, what we need to do is we need to have a very unemotional conversation about how do we secure the borders, how do we live in safety, right?
Yep.
But how do we do that without jeopardizing job growth in the 4% GDP that we hear out of Washington all the time? And our belief and our customers' belief, Scott, is that those are not mutually exclusive of one another.
Well, I would say industry to industry, whether or not they want Peter Thiel here is another question.
Yeah, fair.
He has his own bag of tricks to go with. But you make an incredible point. I've said this many times, and not even relating to immigration. The conversation around involving female and minority founders. Yeah. Why, as an investment portfolio, would you ever want to exclude half of the talent pool?
It's beyond me.
Is way more than half the talent pool.
Would the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, one of our customers, say, you know what, we're not going to hire Canadians this year?
That's going to be a pretty crappy hockey team.
Yeah, right on. Well, so why would you, if you believe in competition, which this administration is, you would certainly want to avail yourself of the best talent. And you can do that without displacing U.S.-born workers, and you can do it without introducing, you know, safety concerns. And that is exactly what our company tries to do. We've been at it for about 20 years, Scott. And what we do is we try to make it very, very easy for companies to hire and manage their foreign-born talent. Immigration is very unique. I started out as a lawyer. You asked about my background, so I assumed.
You can't.
Do I sound like one?
No,
too much?
No. I like you, so I know. I didn't at first think you were a lawyer, but joking aside, this is one of those areas where if you are not a lawyer or you don't have a whole bunch of lawyers in your team, you're at the same disadvantage then that all the startups are.
Exactly right. So we've got about 40 attorneys and paralegals who work with us. I was a lawyer for about, 15, 18 years.
My apologies.
I'm recovering. But the interesting thing about immigration law is all federal law. It's not like a situation where you've got federal law and state law and county law and municipal laws. It's all federal. It's very form-driven. And it's multi-parties. You've got the employer, the HR department, you got the hiring manager, you got the foreign national, the employee, you've got the lawyers, you got multi-parties. So when you think of, okay, I've got one body of law, a lot of forms, and multiple parties, the bell should go off in your head, technology. And that's what we've been doing got for 20 years now. So we built our proprietary technology to make it easy for these companies. You know, in Chicago, we're really lucky. We represent very successful startups, Narrative Science, yep, came out of Northwestern, Power Reviews, slightly
bigger. Stewart, who was in here not that long
ago. Oh, is that right? Yep. Great. Then we represent, Uptake. We represent Outcome. We represent Vivid, high growth, highly successful. Then we represent some of the bigger, more successful ones on that growth spectrum, Cars.com, Innova, Grubhub, and they all have the same set of concerns. How do we take this process of securing critically important talent and make it easy to get them in, allay their concerns, and manage that process smoothly so that we don't have any footfalls and that the foreign nationals can work and be productive and be happy contributing members to our society? And that's all we do, whether it's coming into the United States or going overseas. So I'm feel like the luckiest guy that I get to do a really cool job at a cool company, doing something that hopefully helps the economy grow.
No, absolutely. And I think, if we could nerd out a little bit on the tech side of this, I mean, this is, we have a lot of relationships with tech companies. In fact, everyone you just named has been in the show,
sure,
or on studio or something. And I think of like Relativity as,
yep,
one, like formerly KCura.
Yep.
What they do blows everybody's mind. Nobody knows what they do.
Yeah.
But if you actually are a company or a lawyer, you know what they do, and it makes life infinitely easier. And this is an example of something like that.
That is exactly a very good analogy. And Andrew Szasia.
Yeah.
Do you think Andrew Szasia was Native American? Uh-uh.
No.
His parents, born in Poland, as I understand it.
Yep.
And don't we want him on our team? Of course we do.
Yeah.
So, but what Andrew has built, amazing, amazingly successful company, saying there are parts of the legal process that don't require stuffy, expensive lawyers. They can be done by machines more accurately, more efficiently, more economically, and more quickly. Why? Because machine learning has gotten to the point, and computing power to the point, that it can be done. The exact same thinking and thesis in our business. Again, form-driven, federal law, multi-party, there is a role for technology to play.
Yeah. And somebody's got to sift through all these documents. It's not going to be pay $1 million to have a lawyer do it.
That is exactly right. And so we're lucky they have KCura just about a block or two away from, yep, us, as successful as they are, because they are a good analogy. Another one is not based here in Chicago, regrettably, is TurboTax.
Yep.
Same idea. Imagine how TurboTax has made it easier to do something critically important, legally mandated, complex and nerve-wracking. Exact,
yep,
same idea. And it's all because of having good tech talent here working on a great mission.
Yeah. No, I agree. And like, if you could go into the tech on one side of this, I mean, it's a daunting, daunting task for someone to try to solve such a monumental problem. Mm-hmm. From a business standpoint and from a technological standpoint, for anyone out there who's trying to build it, and maybe they're building, this is the next competitor to you, maybe, I don't know. They'll never catch it.
So. No, it's a big space and an important space. So I assume there are.
Well, of course, any good CEO assumes that there's 1,000 people working all day long on it. But like for the next one, maybe it's immigration, maybe it's the, yeah, next KCura, maybe it's the next somebody's.
Law is another one.
Yeah.
Law, the exact same notion for personal banking.
Somebody's chasing after Robert Shapiro's LegalZoom.
Yes,
that's coming.
Absolutely,
so,
right.
What are some of the most important, so you talked about the form-driven, right?
Yep.
What are some of the key components that you guys had to, for lack of a better term, automate?
Certainly.
What are some of the first things that were like, number one, if we screw this up, we don't, yeah, even have a platform?
Very, very good question. I'd be interesting to know whether Andrew at Relativity and whether
we can get him on here with you and we'll have this conversation.
And Upright, they're an amazing,
yes,
business too.
No,
by the
absolutely.
Way. The first thing for us was taking all the government forms, putting them onto our system, and allow the forms through our technology to be automated. So why do we ask you, Scott, three times what your name is, three times what your address is? Let's pre-populate. Let's take,
yep,
prior cases you've done and let's pre-populate. This is not, we're not splitting atoms here. This is,
sure,
not the most complicated technology. That'd be the first one. The second one on the technology front would be create a communication center where all the disparate parties involved in securing the work authorization, and there's a bunch of them. There's the hiring manager, there's the HR department, there's the foreign national, can all work in a very secure, very searchable environment. We created that. So that would be, I'd argue, the second one. And the third one, particularly in this day and age of, think of what's happened to Sony and think of what's going on in the EU with GDPR, it's got to be intensely secure. And that is all three of these are big points of advantage,
sure,
for us, because frequently immigration services are provided by very small boutique immigration firms that cannot afford the technology to automate forms, number one. They can't come up with a robust, secure communication center, secondly, and they certainly don't have the security that we can provide. And, you know, we are dealing with all sorts of information about these employees. A hack would be very, very devastating to them and their business. So we are very locked down, as you can imagine. So I think those are the three biggest technology innovations.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. I mean, you know, listen, we talked to, I don't even know at this point, 30 startups a week I probably talk to one way or the other. And I mean, early stage all the way up to, I would say you're not a startup, but like all the way up to that point. And the things that they get focused on, so like maybe they figured that out. Maybe they figured out the 3 points that they need to get right. The infrastructure and the management skills and the things that it takes to make sure that the accountability is held at its highest, I think are the areas that are most lacking.
Wholly agree. You can argue, I'm so old at this point, as you can tell looking at me.
The law background. That's what aged you. It was a deal with the devil you made, but you know what? You look pretty good.
You paid a price forever. But the reality is, in many regards, it's easier to start a startup now.
You know,
computing power, much less expensive.
Well, just white labeling technology that you've built.
Cloud, all that makes easier. The things that have not gotten any easier are the management skills and the people skills. And this is an area where I really had to struggle. I started out as a lawyer. You're basically managing yourself. And now you get to a world where you're managing, I was lucky, departments, maybe 300-400 people. And now here at Envoy, maybe about 100. And we can have the best technology in the world, but if we can't successfully manage by recruiting good people and empowering them and holding them accountable, you know, you're going to die because there's so many other companies trying to get that talent. And that's something where you have got to look at yourself brutally in the eye and say, okay, I'm okay here, but I am really lousy here. Why am I so weak at this? Why do I struggle with this? How do I fix it? Is so something I can't fix, or can't I fix it? I started reading that book. I don't know if you've read Ray Dalio, you know, the guy from Bridgewater.
I do know him, yeah. Yep.
So he published that book, Principles.
Yes, I have read this book. Okay.
It's fascinating. It's an intense company to work for, supposedly. But he is all about, you've got to be brutally honest with yourself. And it sounds trite, but I believe it's true. That you got to decide, what is your fault, number one. Number two, do you think you can fix that fault or not? And a lot of people, times you can't, because what your fault is the flip side of what your best talent is.
Yep.
And then will you have the courage to say, I stink at this, and I'm going to hire great people around me? So, you know, that is, I believe, as hard a task to build a successful company as the technology part. Because technology, you can get good people if you're a good manager. You can attract dollars if you're a good manager. If you're not a good manager, it's all for naught. And that's why has Relativity been successful? Why has Upright been successful? All those, because they've had great management leadership.
I'm just coming to terms with what I call the Michael Jordan rule. All of these awesome players in their respective space, when it comes into managing or coaching, they flop.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd just got fired. One of the best passer and facilitators of all time.
And his star went to bat for him. He still got capped.
He couldn't literally just, you know, I don't know if it's your ego or if you think you can train everybody up or just whatever it is. Just accept that there are people who just do something better than you. That doesn't make them better than you if you've got an ego. They just do that job better and accept it and work with them.
Yeah, you think Tom Thibodeau is a good basketball player?
No, obviously not.
A good coach?
Amazing coach.
Right.
I mean, he grinds the gears a little bit, but otherwise,
great.
Yeah, good,
Phil
good coach. Yeah, number one pick, flames out, comes here.
Yeah.
Good, a good early stage leader and developer.
Yeah, exactly. And they have different spots. But the most successful ones, I believe, are willing to look very critically at themselves, more than they look at anyone else, and say, I'm crappy at this.
Yep.
It's not a worse word. And you got to be brutal about how you get better at it.
No, I totally agree. And I think if I could ask you one question just from CEO level, or any manager for that matter, I actually asked Andrew this question, so I'll ask you the same one. The business of the future, and I look at your business as very much a business of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously killing today, but definitely a business of the future as well. And that is, in the past, you'd have a team and multiple different silos within your business, and they all kind of integrate one way or another, and you know, you've got your team meeting, whatever. But never like today and in the future have you had it where one half the team is, for lack of a better term, a bunch of nerds trying to break stuff, and the other half of the team are trying to sell your services wholly. How much time do you spend making sure that both sides understand each other, or do you find that it's just easier for you to take it as like, all that you guys on the sales side have to understand is what we can do, what we can't do, and how we help people. And on the tech side, you need to understand the weaknesses in the customer experience and clean that up. Like, how do you blend or do you not?
Boy, that's a good one.
I throw stumpers out here.
That's a stumper. Our business is at a scale. We're so small. If we're 100 people, we're on one floor. By design, very flat hierarchical culture. And I, my goal would be to smash the people together,
yeah.
try to find as many forums and vehicles as possible so they get together, whether it's in the office, out of the office, so that they can understand what the other pain points are. Because otherwise, you don't want a situation, another sports analogy, where the offense thinks the defense stinks, yep. and the defense thinks the offense can't score, and then you got all this friction. They have to believe they're singularly on one team, and they're only going to do that if they get to know each other well enough, and it gets more difficult at scale. But they have to understand and walk in each other's shoes as much as possible and be empathic and holding people accountable. Because if they're operating too much in a vacuum, I don't know if I'm answering the question.
No, you are. In fact, I want to add to it, really. It's interesting to me because like I've talked several times with Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network. Yeah. And one of the conversations, and I don't know if this will be helpful to you or Please. If it's just, you know, whatever. Obviously, he fills, for people who don't know LaSalle Network, they fill recruiting for yeah. hundreds and hundreds of people in, per company. And when we had this conversation about filling roles,
yeah.
he said, this is that one place where culture goes from a buzzword to a real thing. If we can build culture and build a safe place and build events and things for people to connect and get to know each other personally, he still finds that the successful companies, K-Cura, now Relativity as an example, where one floor is all their developers wide open space, and yeah. the next wing of the floor, or the next floor for them, it's like five floors, yeah. eight floors, is full of the people who are customer facing, and mm-hmm. they find a way somewhere along the way to blend everyone together, to play ping pong together, yeah, and yeah. drink their Relativity beer. If you haven't had it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So his advice on this was to focus more on filling the right roles for the right places, and then find a way to make them relate.
I totally agree. The most amazing company I've ever got to see, their office is Pixar.
Yes.
Out in Emeryville. Completely different industry, but talk about a tech company. I mean, amazing what they do with CGI and computer animation.
Oh, they're right? 100% a tech company that just happens to use creative influence.
And exceed at telling story.
Yeah.
I got to spend a day there. It was the most amazing day of my life because they deliberately, you know, think of who the founders of business are, Steve Jobs, Ed Catmull, and Lasseter. I mean, three giants in their respective areas.
Yep.
And they deliberately set up their space. They have a huge space out in Emeryville where they forced everybody right into the middle. Now, it's difficult in high rises in downtown Chicago, yeah. but they deliberately forced everyone in the middle. They put the cafeteria right in the middle, all the break rooms in the middle to create, and it sounds trite at this point, these serendipitous moments
yeah.
where these different people come together and things happen. And it was incredibly powerful to see that it really works. And then they'd go back and they'd have, you know, Toy Story 3 would be in one little area, and I'm going to get my Pixar movie
yeah,
wrong.
Be careful.
But they would...
No more invites.
But it was incredibly conscious to smash the people together, just like Gimbel would say.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And the interesting thing is we're actually going to be speaking to another company, Paraffin, that talks about the value and the importance of making sure that the space that you're building
yeah.
is... physically manipulates people in the ways that make your company successful. It doesn't just stop at the title. It literally starts at the door.
Yeah, absolutely. I think folks who miss the opportunity to have their office reflect their culture and drive their values, which you would think one would be collaboration, at least yeah. for us it is, and empowerment, miss a complete
opportunity. I thought replacing cubicles with the glass windows is how... I thought that solved... Does that not solve the...
We got that done.
Yeah, well, you cover it up with, what do you call it, David... or is it... You know, the mathematician, Nash.
Oh, yeah, the guy, the Princeton guy.
Yeah, anyway.
I can't think of his first name.
Yeah, like Nash having yeah. writing all over the window yeah. so he can't
Beautiful
even see
mind.
Him. Beautiful mind, yeah. correct. So before we kind of head out with you here, one of the things I'd like to have you do is offer up to anyone who is trying to figure out, you know, how to manage immigration, how to manage sure. workflow across borders. What are the first steps? What should they do? And you can include where to go to work
certainly,
with you guys.
Certainly. Well, thank you for the opportunity to answer this question and to be here. If you are wondering why about foreign national talent, it is complicated, but you are missing out on an incredible talent pool if you do not consider retaining foreign talent. So foreign national talent. So I'd encourage you to do that. To do it right, you need the help of an attorney, particularly in this environment of heightened scrutiny. We'd love it if you'd reach out to us. We've been in Chicago 20 years. We consider ourselves part of the startup community still here. Lucky that we're growing quite nicely, but we are Chicago through and through. Even though our companies, our customers are nationwide, we're here. And we talked about some of those ones. Reach out to us, www.envoyglobal.com. Right?
No, I want to add to that one thing, because we've actually had people who are like, oh, you know, all of a sudden the Startup Showcase and shows we do feature a lot of companies of your size and yeah. nature, and I'm going to pound this nail until people get it. the one, maybe the biggest asset of Chicago is the sheer number of companies like you, your size and bigger, that have been around for 25 years plus, that could help you understand how to scale a company and could be an instantaneous partner.
Completely.
And why we are so hell-bent on the startups versus the old Buffalo.
Wow,
it's just
so
like
dumb.
Cars.com. They're, we call them affectionately an OG. They're an old
yeah.
startup, but they're still, everyone's a startup. If you're continuing to iterate in your business, you're a startup forever.
You are exactly right. And having these false distinctions between them is dumb.
Totally agree.
So we'd love to help www.envoyglobal.
Awesome.
It's all we do. Certainly top 10 player in the space, so we'd love to help.
Awesome. Dick, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Of course, anytime. You can catch this episode and more at technori.com. Please download the Technori podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori. And of course, you can DM or follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.
Wait a minute, turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play
it
though.
I hope you got in tune.
He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Katoon. I'm saying, wait a minute, turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Katoon.